This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Yeah, it took a wonder goal for all their possession. And even though they've had a couple of chances and you need your goalkeeper to play well, which he has, it's took a wonder goal from Kevin De Bruyne, and you say, typical, you know, you can, that little bit of quality, that bit of magic, what the top players have got. And we've produced a little bit ourselves with the goal, you know, with John Joe's goal as well. The goalkeeper was nowhere near it. So the two goals we scored are real good quality. And of course, the one thing you have to do is defend and defend well. And I thought, to a T, they were terrific in their work. And good to see. Training ground goal. And there's an assist from Almiron for the first one as well. Don't forget that, which is important to him, I assure you. Do you know the supporters have been nothing but terrific everywhere I've gone in the city? And you know, you can't stop the idiots on social media and all this nonsense, but only results help you in that respect. So I hope there's a little bit coming.
Off the Ball kicks off now on BFM 89.9.
Newcastle boss Steve Bruce, after his side stopped the champions of England, Man City. Well, it was a draw. It's me, Ross. This is Off the Ball, the Monday show. And in the studio with me, I've got Craig Marais.
Hello, hello.
All right, Craig. Keishnan's here.
Hello, Ross.
Just by the skin of his teeth. and Stuart Cavins, 2 weeks in a row. Well, hey.
Why, aye.
Why, aye. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Follow us on Instagram and on Facebook. It's BFM Football. So much to talk about. We start with Newcastle 2, Man City 2. We heard Steve Bruce at the start. I thought, terrific performance by the Geordies, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. Defended.
This is considering the Monday 3-0 Aston
fantastic.
Villa.
Yeah, really, really. They're good. They're pretty good at home. And then they can't translate it away from home. And one of the things that strikes me is the difference between Bruce's Newcastle and Benitez's Rafa's Newcastle. And we always used to say, oh, Rafa's doing such a good job when he played for 9% of possession against City. And that really annoyed me 2 years ago. And it still annoys me now. And Bruce sets up to at least try and score one or two goals, as well as defending. And good on him for that.
Imagine if Newcastle can get their forwards firing.
Yeah, Joe Linton as well. I mean, Almiron hasn't scored hasn't scored this season.
They've got one goal so far, and that was Joe Linton.
And I mean, the thing about this Newcastle side is, and Steve Bruce, I remember when he got appointed, and a lot of us mocked it, me included. Yep. You know, and I thought it's no one wants the job. You know, give it to the hometown hero or hometown lad, and he's never going to say no to it. But what Bruce has actually done, he's got them, like Stu said, you know, he's got them playing a lot better than they did under Benitez.
Agree.
You know, there's a couple of kids from the academy that are now in the first 11.
Saint-Maximin looks fun.
Saint-Maximin, I mean, he's lightning quick. He's tricky. He's you know, a good signing, but you know, once they get those forwards, like you said, Ross, you know, once they get them ticking, you know, Almiron, I think, is a fantastic player.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, he works his socks off. Yeah. He's got bundles of energy. He's quick. He's tricky. Great left foot. But he can't translate that into goals. Mm. Joe Linton, for all his hard work, and it does a lot. You know, I mean, it obviously doesn't get recognised when you're a striker and you do all the donkey work, but don't really get the goals. Mm. It doesn't get recognised enough, but he does his fair share of it. And every player in that team plays their part in Newcastle picking up points here and there. And look, yes, they were at home, but I mean, you're playing the champions of England.
Well, this is it.
World-class side, and they held their own.
And to come back from that De Bruyne scream. Oh. Keish, what's happened to City? Are they sleepwalking out of the title race?
I mean, I know you've got to praise Newcastle a lot for that performance. To be fair, under Rafa Benitez as well, they were able to beat Newcastle. Last season, there was that amazing 1-0 win. When, realistically, yes, they were far more defensive in that game. But in this game, they conceded 2 goals. And the only reason I feel that they were able to still go up front and still get those 2 goals is because they were up against a City side who defensively are not as strong as they were last season.
Yeah.
There were lots of gaps at the back in this game, and I felt that it could have even been more than 2 goals for Newcastle at certain portions of the game. Defensively, they just seemed to struggle, and we spoke about this earlier in the season as well, right? the fact that Man City did not reinforce their defence after the departure of Vincent Kompany. And if that's something that's going to come and bite them back at some point this season, it's that defence. And it's already consistently bitten them already. Two or three, four or five times they've conceded unnecessary goals in different games. They've dropped points unnecessarily. And they now find themselves in a really, really difficult situation.
11 points trailing Liverpool.
Absolutely. It's completely messed up their... It's messed up their whole team because they've had to compromise Fernandinho. So Fernandinho...
But at the end of the day, it's because they didn't want to pay...
Because they didn't want to play for Maguire. Top money. Which was a bit crazy in itself. But they, now they're compromising the whole way they play because they've moved Fernandinho out of... You know, he's a fulcrum of that team. He was arguably one, well, certainly one of the most important players in that team that allowed the other creative guys to do what they wanted to do. Now they bought Rodri, who's good, but he's taken time to get up to speed and be consistent. So they're desperately missing Fernandinho. So they're not allowing the attacking midfielders to play as well as they have been. And they there's something missing there. They don't seem to press as well as we're used to seeing them.
And I'm just wondering the lack of investment and the I'm just wondering if that's because the board think that Pep Guardiola is going to leave at the end of the season. He's won two back-to-back Premier League titles. Khaldun Al Mubarak recently came on Sky Sports for an exclusive, and when asked about Guardiola's future, he was really, really coy. He just went on to just say we're happy with him, he's happy with us, but there was no answer as to whether he's going to stay beyond the summer. And I think the lack of investment, perhaps it's down to that, because there's a lot of rumours about Arteta has one Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, who's undergoing a mentorship at Man City at the moment. He's said to be really highly rated by the City board. So there's a lot of question marks in terms of what happens at the end of the season. And I'm just wondering if the way the board has reacted and behaved in the last 6 months is related to that.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I just don't feel that Pep is ready to walk out of the City just because...
Unless they win the Champions League.
And I think that's what he was brought for. We all know that. They'd won titles before he'd come. They've won the Premier League already. The main thing that they need to do is win that Champions League. And look, they've won, you know, back-to-back titles, like you said. They've dominated it, obviously, last season. But the whole project to bring Pep to City was that. And... I mean, they've obviously realised they've made a massive mistake in not investing.
If he doesn't win it this season, what happens?
Will he stick around?
It's totally up to him.
He hasn't been there a long time, let's be honest. Was it 3 years, 4 years?
This is third year.
It's third year. It's not a long
fourth
time.
Fourth year, sorry. Yeah.
But he himself has always said in the past that managers have a shelf life and players stop listening after 3 years.
And he's so intense, he needs a break.
And this is a turning point because David Silva leaves at the end of the season. Sergio Aguero is ageing, right? Fernandinho is getting older as well. There's a number of players in that City side that will, you know, in the next season or the following season, it's over for them at Man City, right? So it's like it's the turning point for Man City, and a lot of people are wondering whether Pep Guardiola will be a part of that new Man City once that turning point is reached.
But again, it's totally up to him, though. He's not going to be fired, no matter what he does.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
But you look at their squad management, and you think, well, okay, so you got Foden to take over from Silva. You've got nobody really to take over from Aguero, so they desperately need a striker as part of their squad management.
I mean, Jesus isn't that bad a replacement. He's not Aguero, but
he's not going to be number one, though. He hasn't shown us anything that he could be the number
forward.
One. Yeah, but Man City are much better than Brazil, right? So, there's no doubt about that. He hasn't done enough to say, right, he will be the natural successor to Aguero. They need to go and buy somebody like Lewandowski
and defence
like that.
And defence.
I think the defensive situation will kind of be rectified in January, but
they need Laporte back, basically.
They need Laporte back. I mean, we're all forgetting what a big miss.
Mendy's lost his powers from the start of the season.
I mean,
he was awesome.
Yeah, since last year. You talk about last year.
He's just never really settled down.
Because he doesn't play that often.
The injury problems,
All right, let's move off City. Let's talk about Liverpool, who can't stop winning. Here's Jurgen Klopp.
Unnecessary, of course, because we had unbelievable big chance in the first half. Goalie off right made incredible saves. We scored two wonderful goals after set pieces, and I liked a lot of parts of the first half. The difficulty of this game was especially that Brighton is meanwhile a really good football playing side. They put a lot of players between the lines, which makes it difficult. At the end, they don't have in the moment not enough players, and in the finishing third, where or in the box, if you want, because they put so many players there, it's really difficult to defend. So they had their a lot of possession. We had to work really hard against that. I love that, that the boys were ready to do that and such an intense week. And so, yeah, and then you saw second half, the red card for Alisson, a completely cold goalkeeper's coming in, cold feet, cold hands coming in, and yeah, and this kind of goal. After that, made two more saves, really good by the boys, threw everything on the pitch. I love that. It's unbelievable how much they boys want to win, and so, but made it a really special win today.
It was a special win. Two sublime crosses from Trent Alexander-Arnold. Two superb headers from Virgil van Dijk in 6 first half minutes.
Yep.
Done.
So, yep. And as Trent Alexander-Arnold himself said, there you go, fantasy. Perfect for that. Yeah. And you know what? I really hope Liverpool win the league. And one of the reasons is that they can win games in different ways. And they really, really, they can play really averagely and still have weapons like the corner, free kick delivery, and the Virgil van Dijk header. The stat I saw over the weekend that I enjoyed was that they've scored 40 set-piece goals since the start of last season.
Yep.
That's for miles more than anybody else, which you wouldn't think because you assume they're a great attacking flair team.
No, I think, you know, when you have someone like Van Dijk in the area, it's a massive weapon. But I think we're taking a little gloss off the kind of deliveries that go in. And a big reason of that is because they've got someone like Trent Alexander-Arnold who can deliver. I mean, the way he whips it in, the technique that he uses, I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And like Stu said, you know, when the main attacking guys aren't contributing, you know, they've got actually people that step up. Yep. And okay, no expect of Van Dijk to score 2 goals. I mean, it's near enough uncommon, but you know, it just shows like Liverpool playing a variety of ways they can score goals from any type of. And it was always going to be a difficult game against a very good Brighton side this season.
Yeah.
And you know, after the red card and everything, they kind of hung on a little bit. But there again, credit to the team as well for hanging on. It's not easy.
There's a statistic that says Trent Alexander-Arnold is about 37 goals away from matching Paul Scholes' total number of assists in the Premier League. And how old is he, Trent Alexander-Arnold, right?
21.
And the craziest thing, I mean, we just spent a bit of time speaking about Man City's defence, and you juxtapose that to what happened with Liverpool. Literally, all 3 points came from 2 defenders, right? 2 assists and 2 goals. That's what a great defence brings you, not just stability at the back, but also offensive prowess.
Sticking with the defensive theme and segueing a little bit, I watched Juve lose this weekend. De Ligt. Oh my goodness, what a bad game he had.
They
drew to drop points and Inter. Yeah.
Yeah, but De Ligt has been struggling for some strange reason.
You know, it's not easy to go into Serie A. Everybody thinks Serie A is dead simple, especially as a defender. It's not easy. And a very young guy. To go from Ajax youth and walk all the way through that team, all the way up to the big team and play so well and look good with all your mates around you, to go in to a place like Juve that is famous for its defence and to follow footsteps of the defenders that have let or not playing so well, I can understand that. He's still a young boy.
Anyway, just to wrap up that game, Buffon. Massive mistake as well. So yeah, anyway, that's that. The guys previewing this Brighton Liverpool Brighton tie on Friday were saying they were talking about Graham Potter because 6-year contract handed out to Potter. We've seen how well that's worked.
Pardew. It used to be known as.
But you get the feeling this one's the right move, right?
I mean, you can't say that. I mean, he's what, how many games in? What, 13, 14 games in into his Brighton career? I mean, it's good for a manager to have the backing of the board, I guess, you know. But they realise it's good work. I mean, I thought it's a bit crazy, to be honest.
Right.
But it's probably in view of you know, team sacking managers right now.
Trying to buck the trend.
No, I mean, team sacking managers right now and him possibly being linked to a few. If Everton, for example, part ways with Marco Silva, you know, they'd see, okay, Graham Potter's doing a good job with Brighton. Could that be of interest? So it's probably in just safeguarding themselves from that. But I just go back to Brighton and I say, you know, after they got their goal from the free kick, you know, they grew in confidence a little bit and they're really pushing Liverpool towards the end. But you know, you go back to the goal. That Lewis Dunk scores.
Yeah.
And off air, you were saying, you know, I mean, how long does it take Adrian to organise his wall?
Yeah, because the referee actually doesn't wait for the goalie to arrange the wall before he blows his whistle.
But if you actually watch it, he's screaming for about 20 seconds to
the guy who was on far left.
Yeah.
He just wasn't moving. He just wasn't
shouting at someone and no one was listening to him. And it was a well taken goal.
All right, well, Liverpool keep marching on. Not so good for their Merseyside neighbours. Another defeat for Marco Silva and Everton. Here is the winning manager. This is Brendan Rodgers of Leicester City.
I thought, listen, VAR have got a lot of grief since it's come into the league and the referees as well, but I think today was a real positive for the referees and VAR. I thought the penalty that we got in the first half, whenever you see it back, probably wasn't, and even though it was given in the game, so that proved to be the right decision. And of course, Graham, he could have very easily flagged early on, especially at that moment in the game, so late, because obviously the linesman flag had gone up. But it was clear to see that it wasn't a penalty from the VAR, and it ended up getting us the 3 points. But that aside, I thought that we deserved it. You know, we were the team looking to impose our way of playing in the game. Difficult first half. You know, they were sat back in 5-4-1, and against any team that was very, very difficult. But we tried to still stay positive and play our offensive game. To then have to come from behind as well, it really, you know, demonstrates the spirit and the quality in this team, that, you know, that relentless mindset to keep going and keep going. And by the end, we thoroughly deserved it.
Leicester City boss Brendan Rodgers, Leicester 2, Everton 1. How good was the Iheanacho substitution?
Well, inspiring
substitution. All right, let's start with Everton. Going into the weekend, Marco Silva under immense pressure. But anyone who saw this game will see that Everton actually played quite well.
Yeah, they did. And I think a large part of that was due to the formation, as Brendan Rodgers mentioned in there. You know, they knew... going to Leicester, you know, they had to be a little bit more conservative, you know, and very defensive minded. And yeah, Leicester found it hard to break them down. You know, their key players didn't really show up in the midfield areas, their creative players, and space for, you know, people like Vardy to run into, and the space between the back line and the keeper. You know, he didn't have much going for him. So Everton came out in a very conservative manner. Which, okay, they got their goal, which was a fantastic header by Richarlison. And then after that, it was more or less, okay, let's shut up shop and just try and see this one out. But the quality showed from Leicester in the end.
I mean, I was exceptionally delighted for Iheanacho. I mean, 2 or 3 years ago, when he first broke through the Man
hot,
City scene,
right?
was hot.
Yeah.
And he looked like he could go on to be play a starring role for a mid-table Premier League side. He's got plenty of pace, he can score goals. But obviously, since joining Leicester, even when he first signed for Leicester, I thought he was going to be the main guy, right? But he struggled for form, he really didn't adapt really well. But I think, given the context of Leicester City now and the season they're undergoing, he can very much play a huge, huge role, like the kind of role that Divock Origi played for Liverpool last season in the run-up to the Champions League, coming off the bench, scoring important goals. And he's got the confidence now, having done what he did against Everton. And I think it's having him is going to be immense for Leicester if they are going to really, really push Liverpool all the way. Because, you know, there comes a point where Jamie Vardy will drop in form a little bit. And in times like that, you need someone as quality as Iheanacho on the bench to be able to come on and give you that firepower.
Or you can do what you did here and go to two up front, which, you know, that's what changed the game, really. And one thing about Rodgers is a very, very good manager. And he'll make all those players better. And Iheanacho is probably a really good example. He's lost his way a little bit. Brendan Rodgers will come in, give him all the patter. We've all seen the documentaries will give him all the patter. We think you're great. You're probably
brown
the best
envelope. Not your name.
More like you're the best player at the club, sort of stuff. And you know, he's such a good man manager. He'll make all those squad guys play better and make have a much more important role in the team.
How far can they go? Can they actually really push Liverpool for the title?
I don't see why not. Really, I don't see why not.
Well, for me, it'd be interesting to see after this Christmas period and how they come out from it. I think that will be massive, because, I mean, if you look at the team, there's not many rotation going on.
Yeah, you know, and they're a bit thin at the back, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, one big injury.
Yeah, you know, at the back. Johnny Evans goes out.
What, Wes Morgan comes in?
Yeah, something like that. Wes Morgan.
Likewise, up front, sorry.
They do have Benkovic, who's a really, really good player, but I'm not sure if he's still injured or not. He's a really good player.
What off Everton then and Marco Silva? How much time has he got?
It's interesting because I think he would have gone into this game and knowing, which is why, like, as I mentioned just now, you know, he's set up in a very conservative manager. I'm not sure he'll make it to the end of this to the next game week.
Because they got Liverpool in midweek.
Yeah, I think that they're just sniffing around. I mean, they're trying to lock in a manager so they can announce the departure of Silva.
If Everton were smart, they'd say, right, okay, you can go now, put in a temporary guy for the Liverpool game where you're not going to get anything anyway.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, even if you get hammered with a temporary guy. Then the next guy comes along and takes over after that.
Who is it, Duncan Ferguson? Is he still his assistant?
You should definitely let him
take that team to over.
The challenge with Everton is over the last 3 years, they've chopped and changed. Mm. And managers that have come in have all been managers of different mold, right? The direction of the club has been altered so many times already.
And they've signed loads
and
of players.
And players have been brought in depending on the direction and philosophy of these players. There was a recent interview with Davy Klaassen, who, you know, Everton signed and he's now, I think, in Bundesliga. And he just spoke about how at some point the squad was just filled with players of different mold and you just didn't know how to fit them and piece them together. And the real question mark is the next guy comes in, what happens to a lot of these signings that were made, right? Your Bernards, your Richarlison, who enjoys playing as a number nine, but with the new manager, really want him playing in a number nine position. Yeah, yeah. What happens to Moise Keane, who's struggling to hit his strides with Everton as well? So there's a lot of problems with Everton. I'm not saying that Marco Silva needs to say, I'm saying that even if he leaves, I don't see an end to this problem with Everton anytime soon.
In that situation, don't you just say, right, okay, we'll get somebody at the start of the season, the end of next season.
Moise.
No, not necessarily. I mean, you get somebody now to take care up to the end of the season, make sure nothing silly happens like relegation. Then you have your manager that you'd like that fits your model, in the way that they have Silva that fit their model, and try and play, and then you don't need to change the players that much. But absolutely right. You see that in so many teams all over the Premier League. They've got players that were signed by this manager and that manager don't fit the next guy.
All right, brilliant stuff. We're going for our first break. When we come back, we'll talk about the new Arsenal and hear from Freddie Ljungberg next.
Where's the try? And he's always prepared to give it a go.
Off the Ball on BFM 89.9.
Captain, leader, legend.
Off the Ball on BFM 89.9.
Thanks for sticking with us. Keish, Craig and Stuart in the studio. Norwich 2, Arsenal 2. Here's Freddie Ljungberg.
Yeah, no, it's I want to win football games. I think we started the game extremely well. Pinned them back totally and we need to see if we can create a bit better and score some goals when we play that well. I think everybody sees that we need to work on our transition games. We have the ball and they counter twice and take the lead. And that's something, of course, easy for me as a coach. I can see that and then we have to work on it. So disappointing, but we know what to work on.
Former Calvin Klein underwear model. of course, temporary charge, first game. I mean, doesn't matter who you are, you can have, you know, we all know Arsenal attacking top heavy. It's just at the back, they've always had problems. And it's again.
I was watching this game with a friend of mine who's a massive Arsenal fan, and he was extremely optimistic for this one. Obviously, you know, a fresh change, a fresh outlook as well. But an hour before the game, when the starting 11 came out, I think it caught everyone by surprise because literally he picked the worst Arsenal players for every, you know, like Mustafi started and it was disastrous. Yeah. There were a couple of times when Timo Pukki just turned and just ran around him for fun, slipped and fell down. Yeah, it's ridiculous, right? Granit Xhaka went missing so many times in midfield. Kolasinac, Joe Willock struggled. Pepe did not feature, right? So, I mean, I think the only positive
you
I took out of
for
the
your
game,
friend, right?
I felt for my friend definitely, but the only positive I took out of the game was the fact that I thought Arsenal showed a bit more ambition than they have going forward in a lot of the games that they've played in this year. But I mean, defensively, some of the movements, David Luiz and David Luiz and Mustafi. I mean, what a... How is that? How did Arsenal end up with
that Premier League
central
playing.
Defensive partnership?
Okay, so off air we were talking about possible Arsenal replacements. I threw up Niko Kovac. They all laughed at me.
No.
Allegri, jobs too small for Allegri.
They have to go for him. If you're talking about three managers, I mean, I think the Poch one's a little bit too far out for them. But, I mean... It has to kind of make sense. And you know, Allegri, you know, as Keish was saying, you know, before Juve, not exactly the greatest manager.
What about Mikel Arteta?
Inexperienced. I mean, you'd like someone to step into the role that has that bit of experience behind you. I think Allegri...
Tony Adams,
3 years.
It's Tony Adams.
He's put me out of that one. I think Allegri, with that winning mentality that he's had over the last few years, being successful with
Juve.
He can
come into his reputation as well. And the squad needs a bit of a shake-up, right? Yeah, in the dressing room. The players need to know that there's someone in charge, that they're no longer in control. So they need to be rattled a little bit. And Allegri, I mean, regardless of his reputation in the past, I, for one, don't think he's as good as he's made out to be, simply because prior to Juventus, his record with a lot of the clubs was just
average.
You know, average. Yeah. But I mean, all credit due to him. He did perform stuff with Juventus. And I think having dealt with players that played at Juventus, the caliber of players that were there, he will come in with the reputation of having worked with some of the best in the world. And I think that would just trickle down into the dressing room a little bit to just shake things up and rattle the players a little bit.
By reputation alone, you cannot make David Luiz and Mustafi defend the football.
If there's any consolation, though, he's Italian.
So actually, that's...
How do you think Bert Leno felt?
Never seen a team like this that defenders are almost scared to put their foot near the ball. Nobody attacks
the body of the line.
There's the defenders and the defensive midfielders just watching. Norwich, by the way. This wasn't Real Madrid. This was Norwich.
There was a genuine question. Would Phil Jones walk into the starting 11?
No. He complimented them very well.
Smalling with captain.
There was this one instance. There was this one instance when I think it was Kenny McLean just kind of like burst through, and there was
He did.
It just parted.
They just opened up.
And I mean, he must be thinking, "Wow, what's going on here?"
The amount of time Tom Cantwell ran past Kolasinac, and you just thinking,
he should have got another one as well.
I thought Norwich were really unlucky. If it wasn't for Bernd Leno. They should have got 3 points. Because they, especially in the second half, I thought they were
three
really
big
good.
Saves,
massive. Some of them world class saves as well.
But you know what? If I owned Arsenal, I'd be tempted to say, right, I'm going to go and get maybe not Allegri, but an old school Italian manager,
Ancelotti,
that can speak English. No, more defensive than Ancelotti. an Italian manager that just knows how to defend, and you just say to the guys up front, do what you want, lads, as long as I drill this back four and two defensive midfielders, we'll do this. You guys go and train yourselves, do whatever you want, fight guys in the
Mustafi,
street.
Put this mask on.
So, I tell you who'd be good, Ranieri.
But
he wouldn't do it. He'd be perfect.
What's the deal with Pepe, though?
So I
really don't get it.
I was just going to come back to that. I mean, you know, Lundberg's taken over and they're looking for that new manager bounce. He had 2 to 3 days, to be fair to them, to work with the team and sell out the team. So I don't think he made too many changes. Like Keish, I think the main issues were his starting 11. But if you're chasing a game, you've got a guy that spent £70 million on. You know, you bring a guy from an academy on, which is fair enough. You know, Saka, he's a decent young prospect. But you can't, you surely can't not bring on your £70 million attacker and leave him on the bench. My only thing is that, you know, how the club have seen him. I mean, I don't know whose signing he was. Was it a director of football or whatever it was? But I don't think he was Emery signing. And, you know, I don't think Lundberg fancies him as well.
Okay.
It's the only thing I can think of. I mean, if you're that, you know, you cast it to the side and not even get a sniff of a few minutes, especially when you're chasing a game. Well, and not for the first time this season.
All right.
Sorry, Ross. What I find quite interesting, though, is we've just spent 5 minutes absolutely slating Arsenal, and rightly so. They're still ahead of Man United in the league.
Yeah. Of course they are. Yeah. We'll come to that later. Let's quickly talk about Chelsea before the break. Chelsea 0, West Ham 1. This was a surprise. It was more of a surprise that, well, they were so bad because they missed Tammy Abraham.
Yeah.
Tammy Abraham's mobility. We all call for Giroud.
I
mean, Giroud's a great striker, but the brand of football that Frank Lampard wants to play with Chelsea
is not
dynamic attacking, where the front four moves interchange. It really doesn't fit.
I think he's okay.
Right, he has come off the bench to score goals. You put him in a side like, tell me he won't score for Everton.
Okay.
I think he doesn't score goals for France.
No, but he's scoring.
But he gets into good positions.
Plays differently.
When it was under Maurizio Sarri, he has come off from the bench to score a lot of goals. Mm. With Arsenal, he came off from the bench. He started and scored lots of goals as well. I think you just need to play him in a right system. He's not the greatest striker in the world, but there's a reason why Didier Deschamps likes him up front.
Yeah. I actually surprised by Shuri didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he played Pedro as well. He's like he brought some of the old guys back for one last hurrah. Didn't really fit with what he's been doing all season.
Yeah. The feel-good factor in this game was 33-year-old David Martin after the game hugging daddy Alvin.
Crying in tears.
Crying after that. And a clean sheet. Who knew?
It was his first...
Drop Roberto.
He's a Milton. He's an MK Dons legend. Yeah, I think he's made close to 300 appearances.
Millwall for a while.
Journeyman.
But this was his first Premier League appearance in 16 years, something like that, in his career.
I don't think he's ever played in the Premier League.
No, his debut.
It's a 16-year career.
He's played for the first time, yes.
It's a remarkable story, you know. And we spoke about Roberto over the last few weeks and how dodgy he is. I thought West Ham, you know, you talk about under pressure managers.
Yeah.
And
Pellegrini played quite well in this game.
Pellegrini's one of them. And I think this was a big game for him. It was against Chelsea, who West Ham absolutely despised. And it's a derby in its own right. And West Ham were good. Yeah. You know, you could talk about you know, Tammy Abraham missing and whatever, you know. But you know, you still got to do the business on the field.
But big telltale when you put your £45 million striker on the bench and you play Mikel Antonio up front instead, right? I mean, it's a slight giveaway.
No, but it's really strange for me because Sebastian Haller was one of the best strikers of the Bundesliga last year. So was Joel Linton for Newcastle, who was playing in the Bundesliga and scoring goals for fun as well. But both men have really struggled to make their marks in the Premier League.
But if you look at them, they're very similar in how they play. The game styles are pretty similar. And, you know, I've seen Haller a few times. Joel Linton, I'd rate a little bit higher than him,
actually. Really?
Yeah. I mean, I would on playing in the Premier League.
Yeah.
But Haller just looks, I mean, he's a big guy. But he doesn't command himself well. And when he's up against, you know, tough centre-backs, you know, ones that stick close to him and you know, will give him a bit of a physical battle, he doesn't like it. And the sooner, I mean, look, you've got to give them all, you know, that grace period where you adjust yourself to the Premier League. But at the moment, you know, he's just not doing the business. And both of these guys, were 40 million, were they?
Yeah.
It's a lot of money. A lot of money.
Sebastian Haller was partnered with Luka Jovic.
Yeah.
And both of them aren't doing well at their respective clubs.
Well,
I
don't think Jovic gets much of a look in, to be fair.
All right, then. Well done, West Ham. Pellegrini with some bought time. Back after this very short break.
Because whilst he's there, it's very difficult for other clubs to get near them. He's that good.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
England's highest quality title race of all time, but coming out on top again in the Premier League, Manchester City.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
Hey, thanks for sticking with us. Keishan and Craig and Stuart in the studio. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Follow us on Facebook and on Instagram. It's BFM Football. Jose Mourinho's Tottenham Revolution just rolls on. Three wins on the bounce now. 3-2. They beat Bournemouth. Stuart was just joking off air. They concede two goals every game.
Yeah, so much for Bora and Jose. I think he only let in six goals in his whole first season at Porto. And he's done it in three games at Spurs.
Dele Alli, you can see, is the one who's benefited most.
A lot of people obviously were sceptical when Mourinho was appointed by Spurs. In fact, just a game and a half in, I think after his first week in, I was sold that this is a complete different Jose Mourinho. And I don't think it's just down to the way Spurs have played. Obviously, they are far more offensive these days. I think this is the first time he has conceded as many goals in his first three games since his first stint with Chelsea.
Really? First season?
Yeah. So it's incredible in that sense. And I also don't think it's purely down to the fact that, you know, him treating the ball boy and you know, feel-good factor on the club. There's the one fundamental
ball
change.
Ball boy got to makan with the first team.
Exactly. Hey. The one fundamental change that I'm seeing in Jose Mourinho is the fact that he's gone on to poach the assistant manager at Lille, Sacramento. Yeah.
Two of them, right?
Two coaches. Primarily
from
Sacramento.
You should hear the Lille president talk about him.
Yeah. And at Sacramento in particular, is a 29-year-old. He's an absolute genius.
Do you see the connection with Jose on the touchline?
He has.
The high fives and the hugging.
This guy did not play professional football, you know, studied in Wales, came through, you know, doing a number of voluntary work before he was spotted by Luis Campos, the famed technical director of Monaco and Lille, who then brought him over to France. And he's been, you know, getting rave reviews all around French football and European football since then. Mourinho has been watching him ever since he was out of job. And this is where I think the change has happened, because the old Mourinho is the guy that we knew from 2004, who came in with his methods and stuck to it, never really wanted to evolve with the times. But I think by getting Sacramento, who's very data numbers oriented, who's very modern, who is no longer part of that old school coaching mentality, he has adapted, or he has shown the willingness to adapt to what it takes to succeed in modern football. And I think having Sacramento by his touch lines, and the fact that he's still negotiating the possibility of bringing Luis Campos over as a technical director, I suppose, as well. I think all these things are very important signs that Jose Mourinho has evolved and is evolving. And I think he's going to do great stuff with Spurs.
Can I just follow up on this because you're going to go away from this a little bit.
I wasn't.
But with poaching Sacramento, he actually first came on Jose Mourinho's radar when he was at university.
Yeah.
And he compiled a detailed tactical report on how Jose Mourinho sets up his teams.
Yeah.
And he actually emailed it or somehow got contact with Jose Mourinho and passed it to him. And ever since then, Jose Mourinho has tracked his career.
Okay.
And so he's been aware of this young guy. Now he's found it, you know, it's the right time to bring him onto his coaching staff. So this is a very knowledgeable guy since he was about 18, 19 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on, Stu.
So now, two things.
Oh, yeah, go on.
First thing, the last guy who was like this, the prodigy of Jose Mourinho, was
Brendan Rodgers.
AVB. Villas-Boas. And he did the exact same thing sending him emails about detailed tactics. And look at him now.
Yeah. He's sending all the good news Solskjaer emails
or kayaking or something, isn't he?
Sending Mehmet some emails.
And what I was going to say earlier was, it's all great. I love all this stuff. I really do. But I'll give you some old school coaching. If you let in two goals every game, you're not going to keep winning.
I mean, just saying this, everyone's given Mourinho a lot of credit and how he's evolved into an attacking manager now. It's not so much the case of that. You've got to look at the personnel that he's inherited as well.
Yeah.
You know, when you have one of the best strikers in the world up there, you've got, you know, someone like Son who, you know, can just floats around, you know, and you know, he's good with both feet, he's quick, he's got everything.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not go to Sissoko, but I mean, you've got Dele Alli and everyone is saying, you know, he fell out with Poch and all that. Does everyone not remember like the amount of injuries he's had in the last 6, 7, 8 months? You know, so it was always going to take a while for him to get back to his best once he had a bit of run of games. So, you give Mourinho credit for getting them wins and so on and so forth, but let's just not forget about that.
Okay,
the two goals for Bournemouth were unavoidable case. The Harry Wilson free kick, all goals are unavoidable.
Even when he had scored three goals against Bournemouth, at no point did he slow them the players down. He kept them going as well. In previous sides, he would have probably, you know, shut shop, keep it tight at the back.
Okay, let's move on and talk about Sunday's game: Man United 2, Aston Villa 2. That's a solid point against a newly promoted side
for the second week running.
Yeah, for the second week running. I mean, you can't complain, really, can you?
I mean, the midweek match against Astana away, you know, and
resting the whole team.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer made the decision to take the kids over so the whole first team could stay back to prepare for this match specifically. And he left Carrick and McKenna back at Carrington.
All they trained on was kicking Grealish.
I actually wonder if they did actually train, because they were absolutely woeful in the first half. I mean, you talk about, you know, passing, moving about, just showing a bit of class, a bit of urgency. They had nothing, you know. I mean, Rashford looked like he hadn't touched the ball in about a week. I mean, everyone was just so off the pace. It was, and Villa, to their credit, I thought Dean Smith organised them really well. Jack Grealish was fantastic throughout. I thought Wesley gave you know, he didn't get on the score sheet.
Trezeguet when he came on
gave them a lot of problems. Yeah.
So apparently the stat doing the rounds on social media at the moment is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's win ratio is 21%.
27 games
in 7 wins in 33 games.
I don't think it's as straight. I'm not saying that he should be absolved of any responsibility from this. Obviously, he carries a huge responsibility from how the team has been performing. But if you're on a, you know, stats like that don't entirely tell the full story. Because if you compare the squads that have been at Ole's disposal over the last, at Ole's disposal, at Mourinho's disposal, at Van Gaal's disposal, you look at Ole's midfield yesterday. Mm-hmm. I don't think Jose Mourinho, Luis Van Gaal, or David Moyes would have gotten a victory with Fred and Andreas Pereira in midfield.
No, that was just right? a big hole in midfield.
That's a ridiculous duo. With the amount of players out injured, we look like we completely missed Scott McTominay, obviously. The story with Pogba as well. So Fred and Andreas Pereira in midfield. Yeah. I don't think it does justice to any manager. Even if Jurgen Klopp had those two at Man United, I think he'd struggle as well.
So you'd do a lot better than Ole is doing. He would do a whole lot better than Ole is doing. No doubt about it.
How long has he got, Stu?
He should be gone now. I get Pochettino, just do it, get on with it. Get Pochettino now, give him time to get in for a January window and buy some decent players.
Yeah, but I just go on what Key says, you know. I mean, I don't think Pochettino is going to come in and make Andres Pereira and Fred any better.
He will.
That's what managers are for. No, I'm sorry.
Would Andres Pereira walk into any of the big Premier League sides?
But good managers can make players better.
Okay, and how did Fred do under Mourinho?
Both
players were under Mourinho.
Also, both rubbish.
Okay, bear in mind that
they were both rubbish, weren't they?
Yeah, so Mourinho's a bad manager.
He was falling out with everybody
You were just singing his praises a minute ago.
Yeah, but that's the new Mourinho.
Bear in mind that Andres Pereira, prior to this, right? Yeah. Unlike a lot of these young players that are currently breaking through the system, Pereira has been given opportunities outside United a lot. In fact, he was even sent on loan to Valencia, where he played under Marcelinho, who is such a highly rated coach. If Marcelinho doesn't get the best out of you, I don't think any manager out there is going to come in and instantly change Andres Pereira.
What's the alternative? Carry on with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and end up in what, 15th with 8 wins for the whole season, and keep saying, oh well, we've got rubbish players. You've got to do something about it. You have to get a proper manager, because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is not a proper manager. He's a failed Cardiff manager. He's now somehow found himself at Man United, and he correctly has very poor players. The one thing you can do, and everybody can save face, is you can get somebody like Pochettino in. I would get Pochettino in and then say, look, at least Solskjaer has blooded all the youngsters. Then Pochettino can come in and mould the youngsters and make them better players and buy some decent players to play alongside.
We've signed 2 big-name managers in the past and they didn't work out. Yeah. Right?
That doesn't make sense to me, because... That's fine.
He's on a trajectory at the moment.
Don't want to go with a big name manager, that's fine. But don't go with an absolutely hopeless, failed Cardiff manager just because he was a decent player.
You've got to look at the circumstances at Cardiff as well. He's going to go down his record.
How do you get a Man United job, the biggest club in the world? How do you get that job if you have absolutely no track record other than a track record of failure?
The story is quite simple. You got the interim, got it as an interim manager, went on a massive run, which I think any chairman would have given you a contract if you're on the run that they had. And it was a no-brainer at the time.
A big run of easy fixtures, and then as soon as you got there...
Fixtures.
They were the easy fixtures.
It wasn't an
easy fixture.
Scove in December.
All right.
He's won 4 games this season. He's won 6 league games since he was given the full-time job. It's ridiculous for Man United to have him as a manager.
His record since then is abysmal. No, I'm not arguing that.
So how long are you going to keep going on with it?
Well... they appointed him with a plan, and
the
and
plan's this is not the, working.
Well, the plan was to blood in
the youngsters.
No one's expecting us to do anything this year.
I don't expect top four. I don't expect. Yeah. I don't even mind if we're out
how
of top
long?
Six.
How many years are you going to not expect?
Until we build the team, right? Which takes a year. He does need another 2 years.
He does need another summer transfer window, and then after that, if the team's at that at the stage they are this time this season, next season, sorry, I totally understand.
We'll be having the same conversation in 12 months' time.
Brilliant. Right, final break. Back with the winners and losers of the weekend right after this.
Where's the try? And he's always prepared to give it a go.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
Captain, leader, legend.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
Hey, thanks for sticking with us. Before we go into the winners and losers of the weekend, we should mention that Southampton beat Watford 2-1, and Kiki Sanchez-Flores, who was hired 3 months ago by Watford for the second time, has been fired.
Yeah.
Again.
They've got 8 points. They're sitting at the bottom
so
of the league.
So they're now, the hierarchy, are sifting through past managers to see who they can bring back.
Yeah. It's the Italian way, the small Italian club way of doing things. It doesn't matter. Just keep getting rid of managers, bring them back, keep getting rid of them. In a year's time, they can get Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and he can keep them in 17th.
Right. The weekend's winners and losers.
This week's winners and losers.
Monday's big winner is Dele Alli of Tottenham Hotspurs. He seems to have benefited most from the change of manager, and he helped himself to a brace at the weekend to lift Spurs up to the fifth. So for being the leading man in Jose Mourinho's Tottenham revolution and for bagging 3 goals and an assist in his last 3, we say Dele Alli, you are Monday's main man. Honourable mentions go to Steve Bruce's Newcastle United for a superb defensive performance against the champions, which included an Almiron assist and a Jonjo Shelvey screamer. To David Martin at West Ham for his debut clean sheet at the age of 33. To James Ward-Prowse for his invaluable late winner against Watford. To Leicester's Kelechi Iheanacho for his assist and winner after coming on as a sub. To Aston Villa's Jack Grealish for his sublime goal and man of the match performance at Old Trafford. And finally, to Chris Wilder's Sheffield United. They are the first newly promoted side to remain unbeaten in their first 7 top flight away games since Blackburn in 1992-93. Monday's big loser is Pep Guardiola and Man City. It wasn't a good November for City with just 2 wins from 6 matches in all competitions. They held the lead for just 5 minutes before Shelvey's sublime equaliser and had to settle for a point. So for slowly sleepwalking out of the title race where they now find themselves 11 points behind Liverpool, we say sorry Pep and Man City, you are Monday's big losers. Dishonourable mentions go to Marco Silva and Everton, just 1 win in their last 5 Premier League matches, and Liverpool are up next. To Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Manchester United, there was no obvious benefit gained from Solskjaer's decision to excuse his entire starting lineup, plus coaches Michael Carrick and Kieran McKenna, from the draining midweek Europa League trip to Astana as they were awful against Villa. To Eddie Howe and Bournemouth, who slumped to their 3rd straight league defeat. That's just 1 win in their last 5 in the league. And finally, to the Watford hierarchy, who are now looking for their 2nd manager this season after sacking Kike Sanchez-Flores at the weekend.
Producer Tasha there with the weekend's winners and losers. There is round 15 happening midweek of the EPL. Some of the massive ties to come out of that. Well, the Merseyside derby, Liverpool versus Everton, Thursday, 4:15 a.m. Is it Marco Silva's last game in charge?
Yes.
If they haven't fired him before then.
Yeah. Like I said, Ross.
Say it's a 4-0 win to Liverpool.
I could it's an Anfield. I can really see that happening.
Easily happen.
Yeah.
It could, but you know, you'd like to think that Everton would be up for this. And if they're going to give, you know, if Marcus Silva is still in the job and he's got any hope of keeping it, you would like to think that this is the game where
he possibly turns it around.
He's going to have to tactically come up with some genius plan.
Well, five at the back didn't work against. So you might try seven.
Against the relentless league leaders and European champions that have dropped 2 points all season. Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Against Ole United, by the way.
Yeah, not the game I'd want to be trying to save my job. He can go to Watford, can he? He can go back there.
Okay. The other massive tie is Jose Mourinho returning to Old Trafford. Is this Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's final game?
It should be.
In previous seasons, whenever Mourinho, a week before he was going to face his old employers, the mind games would have started.
Yeah.
He spoke about Conte when he was at Man United. He spoke about the formation. He spoke about the fact that the rest of the league had only won two titles while he had won three titles, right? Yeah. This time around, nothing has been said. Even when he was asked about Man United post the game, Spurs' last game over the weekend, he mentioned nothing. All he said was the focus should be on Spurs. And if we see a real professional Jose Mourinho with no cheap digs, you know, coming in with a professional performance against Man United, then that's all the convincing you need that this is a new man.
Okay, well, Man City need to get their act together. They're away at Burnley. Now, Burnley were beaten this weekend, so they're going to be smarting. And City against these physically tough teams,
this could be a really tricky one. Yeah,
absolutely. This is a tough one. I honestly, I think City have lost it. I don't think City can come back from it unless Liverpool completely and utterly fall apart because of the fixture congestion.
All about the Leicester City train.
I think the players realise as well, you know. Right. I mean, it's probably too far behind to really put it. And, you know, if Liverpool keep going the way they are up until the New Year period, you know, I think that they'll kind of realise and kind of shift their attention
it's
to the Champions League.
It's four games now. They need Liverpool to lose four matches.
Well, anything can happen during this congestion. I mean, Liverpool have their World Cup and everything going on. But like I said, you know, it'll by the New Year, you'll know. And I think if they know they're too far, they're still at the same kind of points difference, they'll shift all their focus to the Champions League like they should.
They've done it all. They had the 100-point season. They had the treble season. Yep. The same guys. There's hardly any change. They've done it all. You've got to get up for it and play Burnley now. And they go, no, let's look at the Champions League. Let's focus.
And Pep has spoken in recent interviews as well that how difficult it was, especially last season, to get the boys so motivated to reach 98 points after they had clocked in 100 in the previous season. Can you imagine how difficult it is now?
Yeah, you can see it. I think you can see it. And I always say this, Ferguson used to say that all the time, that it was the hardest part of his job over all those years, was continually
winning. That's why you used to freshen up the squad every so often and things like that.
All right, brilliant stuff. That's it. We're out of time. So enjoy the midweek action. We'll be back on Friday to talk about that. For now, I say thank you, Craig Marais.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Keishanan.
Cheers, Ross.
And thanks, Stuart Cavins.
Good evening.
Yeah, have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.
Off the Ball, every Monday on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.